Welcome to the Motocross Save My Life podcast with your host, Brent Airman Wolf.
In 1980, Brent won a Canadian motocross national title at age 14. In the years after, his life spiraled out of control from alcoholism and depression. 26 years later, he won that battle and returned to the motocross track. But 2 years later, he crashed hard at Canada's biggest race, shattering his spine and leaving him paralyzed.
Find out now how Brent continues his latest incredible comeback and how he can help you do the same. No matter what obstacle you face, you can overcome. Giving you a voice speaking about all things mental health, motocross, sport, or whatever your crisis in life may be. Here's your host of Motocross Saved My Life, Brent Airman Worrell.
Welcome, everybody, to the Motocross Save My Life Mental Health Talk Radio Show. As advertised, my name is Brent Worrell. I thank you all for tuning in. A little bit of a different endeavor here since the launch of Motocross Save My Life, which came out in 2019. It's actually been 5 years since we've broadcast from this platform, the Canadian Moto Show. Hard to believe 5 years has sure flown by. I look forward to co-hosting this show with my good friend Kevin Lefebvre, who will be joining us shortly. Tonight on the Motocross Save My Life Mental Health Talk Radio Show, we will talk to Canadian 450 Outdoor National Number 2, Mr. Jess Pettis, who has come off quite a season, to say the least. We look forward to getting Jess's take on the season and catching up with him and maybe touching on the mental health theme that we wish to expand upon here at Motocross Save My Life. Also, it's been a while, way too long, since we've caught up with Maple Ridge Motorsports' top dog on the 450. That is the man we'd like to call the people's favorite, Mr. Ryan Lockhart. Ryan will join the show around 6:45 tonight. The Canadian Moto Show call-in-to-win giveaways were really popular. We're going to continue that here with Motocross Save My Life. Tonight, I have a signed copy. You want a hardcover or a soft copy, I will send it to wherever you are in North America, along with a copy, most recent copy of MXP magazine, where I had the honor of memorializing our late friend, Mr. Alex Harville, who passed away on June 17th at the Grant County International Raceway. So much to get to. I just got off the phone actually with Jess Pettis not long ago. You'll never guess where Jess was. I'm not going to spoil the fun here. I'll let Jess get to that. But without any further ado, welcome to Motocross Save My Life. A big thank you, Mr. Kevin Lefebvre. How the heck are you, my friend? Thanks for doing this.
Hi there, Brent. Thanks for having me on your show. It is awesome to be here. What a privilege.
Yeah, you and I go back along. Okay. Well, that is awesome to hear. Lots going on in your area. Anybody that's still in the fire bite, a new fire flared up there a couple of nights ago down your way, and it's just been a bit of an interesting struggle for most dealing with anything. I touched on some of that with Jess. I mean, we're first and foremost we focused on our passions and the things that get us through, the things that we maybe do and face with maybe not the same vigor that we would face something that we embrace like the sport of motocross. But anyway, I'm rambling in a circle. Maybe you can bail me out, my friend. It's so many thoughts going through my mind right now on the pandemic, the past race season, which was condensed. We all know it started back east. Congratulations to Darian Sinai securing the Triple Crown 250 championship today, as well as Cole Thompson killing it out there, Supercross style at Gopher Dunes. The 450 honors, top spot goes to Dylan Wright. I had hoped to get Dylan on for an interview tonight, but I know he's busy with many things. Looking forward to having Dylan represent Team Canada at the Motocross of Nations. And of course, our 250 outdoor champion, someone that you have a bit of a history with, Mr. Jake Piccolo on the KTM.
Yeah, it was awesome seeing so many BC boys battling it out for the titles. And it was so awesome to see Jake actually win the outdoor title. And tonight I was sure rooting for him for the Supercross and the Triple Crown. And he still did us proud, though. He did a fantastic job. And fantastic yeah. job to Casey Keast and also to
Gibbsy.
Sorry, thinking the name. Tyler Gibbs. Yeah, Tyler Gibbs. And we had Elmore out there. And we had Julian Benick. We had a lot of BC representation, which was awesome to see.
Yeah, and kudos to racing. I mean, most of those kids cut their teeth on the Future West Arena Cross Series, and, you know, a bunch of the weapons out there from Quebec lined up, and it made for a really entertaining series. And to me, racing's where it's at for success. I mean, it's a big commitment, and there's a lot sacrificed, but those kids that are lining up as much as they can around the calendar year, it's paying itself forward. And to see the West do so well, I just, you know, kudos to what's going on out here in the West and everybody else is doing what they can where they're doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we left out the 450 guys, Parker Eels, Jess Pettis. There's a lot of BC representation, and it's awesome to see that. And it's awesome to see that kind of, I'm going to use the word role model, because a lot of these guys, they've been around the BC scene for such a long time. I was at the track with my camera shooting images of, you know, Piccolo when he's still on 65s. And, you know, for me to see that progression to now where he's the 250 champ, it's just phenomenal. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's really hard to imagine how fast some of these kids mature and develop. Just to think back, like less than 6 years ago, I was watching Ryder McNabb pull his bike out of a rut and refire it before the finish line to win a 65cc title, and he wins a Pro National Moto this year, not some, you know, less than 6 years later. Six, seven, eight
yeah,
years later. I'm not sure the math, but time is the ultimate thief. As I've said on here before, I hope they throw the book at him, Father Time, if they catch up with him. Kevin, all right, that's great. I'm going to give Jess Pettis a ring, and we're going to talk some moto and mental health with Mr. Jess Pettis real quick. Bear with me, friends. The chair in the air and his sidekick, Mr. Kevin Lefebvre, will be back real soon. All right, boom. We are back live on the line right now. Mr. Jess Pettis from Prince George, BC. Congratulations on your second overall on your first 450 season for KTM Racing. Welcome to Motocross Save My Life. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Hey, no worries. Yeah, I'm excited to be on the show, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it was super cool to catch up with you at Walton Raceway. And before I get into the aftermath of day's end there, when I pulled in Pro Sunday up to my tent where I was set up, the Dunlop Corner, whatever you want to call it, I looked under my tent and I couldn't believe what I saw. And what I saw was you standing there gunning the racetrack. And as I pulled up really slowly, because I knew why you were there, I could just tell by looking at you, but I couldn't believe it. Tell us about that, what you went through, and what it was like at Walton Raceway.
Yeah, well, for the people that don't know, obviously I had a pretty bad crash the the weekend before in Quebec and ended up hurting my back and in my chest and stuff pretty good and kind of called it a season. And had a few fractured vertebrae and then compressed, but it all turned out to be stable and safe enough to book a last minute flight on Friday morning, actually, out to Walton, and didn't really know if I could ride or what, but I've dug deep before through some injuries, and I knew I just had to go and salvage a half decent ride and get some points to get a good overall championship in the whole championship to end up either second or third overall. So kind of showed up and just was going to go for practice and see how it was from there. And if it hurt or I didn't feel like it was safe to ride, then obviously it wasn't worth the risk. But I gave it a go and gave it my best efforts. It's what I always do.
I was so pumped for you. And as you walked away from me, what I was getting at is your body language told me that you were lining up, and I just couldn't believe it. I was talking to Kevin a little bit earlier, and I did that once back in about 2015. Tyler Medaglia was lined up at an arena cross in Cloverdale, and he full-on yard sale in the whoops, into the boards, and to the point where they were lined up for the final 250 moto of the day, and I didn't even call his name. And as they're coming towards me in the first corner, it's the big number three on that Maple Ridge Motorsports KTM 250. So never sell the fortitude of a racer short. And that day, Jess, I'll tell you, when you came off the track there, that final 450 moto, as you rounded the corner in front of me after landing that finish line jump, I could just see the agony in the side of your body.
Yeah, obviously it was one of those situations where, I've dug deep before, but obviously the back is something else, and obviously I don't want to ever hurt myself for long future or longevity, so, trying to go out there and dig deep, but also being safe, and that's what I did, and I felt like I could ride, to the level that I needed to, and being safe doing that, so it obviously wasn't easy. The adrenaline is really a crazy thing and whatnot, but mentally, I guess it's a tough thing to just block that out. And you still got to go out there. There's still a start. There's other riders. There's a lot of things that can really get in the way. And I mean, nothing's ever certain in motocross, but it all worked out to my plan and it went good. Obviously the aftermath, I was a little bit sore in all my muscles and everything was pretty sore and weak. It was one of those things that I knew I could rest the next day, so I just dug deep and made it happen. But I'm glad I did, and it went in my favor, and then can just rest up after the series.
Yeah, and the Walton racetrack.
Jess, I got to jump in.
Okay, go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, sorry, Brent. Jess, I just got to say, watching you on TV, and we knew you were in pain, and how you put your comfort secondary to the points, to complete the race series for your sponsors, for your team, for yourself. I got to say, it was incredibly inspiring to watch.
Yeah.
Hearing you talk about how I got the next day to recover. It's so inspiring to hear that. So you got a lot of fans. I'm certainly one for sure. And just watching you dig deep like that and pushing past that pain threshold with the adrenaline, but psyching yourself up. But also on this call, hearing you talk about, nothing's certain, but I want to do it. That is so incredible.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's one of those things. I do it for myself. I mean, it was really, at the end of the day, it was my decision, and my team left it up to me. They really put no pressure on me. And obviously they would like me to line up, but there was no expectations on their end because they respect my decision. And I've worked with them the last couple of years. I think this is my third year with them, and I've rode through some injuries before. I've rode with a broken arm with them, and I've rode with a torn ACL last summer, and obviously, I've made it happen. So they know that if I can go do it, I'll do it, and they trusted me and my body and my ability. So I wanted to do it. I'm either all in or all out, and I don't like to half-ass things. So it's also a hard thing mentally to go out to a race not really knowing where I stand or if I can ride or if I got to go salvage, some top fives or top tens or whatever it is. I'm always the competitive type to want to show up and go give it my best effort and try and win. That's why I do it. That's what I get enjoyment out of, is winning. But I kind of had to just shift focus and be grateful for being able to be there and just racing in general. So I kept myself really in check the whole time. I didn't, take any risks or anything like that. But obviously being there riding was a big risk, I guess. But,
Yeah, and I will definitely add to that, Jess. I've watched the Walton track evolve over the course of the last 10 years, and by the end of the season, like it was for that second 450 moto, there's not really a place to rest on that racetrack with the depth and the compaction of those ruts, the marbles and everything else going on there. It's a fine line manufacturing and maintaining throttle control on that 450.
Oh, exactly. It's always going to be breaking bumps and ruts, and no matter what, I mean, I knew there was going to be some forces and landings off some jumps and stuff that were going to bother me. But yeah, I mean, really the worst of it was my chest, I guess, because I had fractured my sternum too. So the breathing part of it was really hard for me. So just trying to control my breathing and not, you know, get my heart rate up too high or anything, because my whole body was just weak. But yeah, I made it happen. And yeah, it's I guess it could maybe go down in a bit of the history books in Canadian moto. One of the gritty rides, probably the hardest one I've had to do. But I'm thankful it wasn't probably Gopher Dunes. I mean, it could have been a couple worse tracks out there, but made it happen.
Yeah, and let's qualify this whole thing. My bad for jumping ahead. I should be docked a lap because this was your first year on the 450. I mean, we start back with all this Supercross excitement that started down in Houston. You had to recover from that, get yourself race ready and fit to race this condensed series on a 450 motorcycle for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess rewinding a bit, it was tough. I mean, not a lot of people know of what went on behind the scenes, but obviously I retore my ACL and had to go in for another surgery, my second winter in a row of knee reconstruction, and got my surgery in February. And I mean, anyone who knows the knee and ligaments, it's a long process. And I mean, I dug hard and deep and did the whole rehab the best I could, ate healthy, fitness. I mean, everything I could really to a T. Got back on the bike at, I think, four and a half months, and I was racing at about just over 5 months. I had about 2 weeks on a 450 in my whole life, maybe 3 weeks. So it was a lot of question marks, I guess, coming into the season. To be honest, about 1 week before the first round, I pretty much was going to not show up because I just wasn't confident in my body and my knee and what I had just gone through. I didn't want to go through that again. But yeah, ended up taking that risk and lining up and raced the summer, and thankfully my knee held together, and all the hard work I did in the off season it held strong. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what makes, like, just the results that I get. It makes it so much more rewarding when, you know, I've had such lows, and then to come back and kind of not prove to other people, but just myself that I can do it. You know, it's a big mental block to try and come off those injuries, those type of long injuries, and do it again. And for the opening weekend, I was on the box, second in the first day, and then I got first overall the second day and had the red plate coming out of the first weekend, which on the 450 I really didn't expect. And I mean, just kind of tried to keep that momentum going all year, and I did, and just kept getting better, which I still think I got a lot to learn, and to learn the bike and, you know, how everything works with the 450, but can just go uphill from here.
Yeah, and your racecraft just seemed on point. I mean, very early in the series, part and parcel, unfortunately, due to some bad luck to some of the other teams and whatnot, but you and Dylan quickly separated yourself and showed everybody that was going to be a two-horse race, and the way you gelled on that bike. And going into the final race at Deschambault, where you crashed on the Monday, I mean, you were 12 for 12 podiums, three overall wins. Dylan finished the year with four, but for your first year in your 450, nice work.
Thank you. Yeah, I exceeded my expectations, even though I you know, got injured and had to salvage that last weekend of racing. Like, if you told me coming into the season I would have been on the podium and overall at the end of the season, and pretty much every moto of the year I was on the podium. So if I would have been told that at the beginning of the year, I would have been really excited about it. So to look back and kind of see the progress I made, and just with my bike and my suspension and learning everything and adapting, you know, I feel like I came leaps and bounds. And it really, the hardest thing was I came into the season just kind of hoping to be, you know, a top five guy, maybe hit some podiums. And I exceeded those expectations really after the first weekend. So I had to make new goals. And then before I knew it, I was battling for a championship. So it was kind of shift that focus of being consistent and smart to maybe I can win a championship. And that was kind of a tough thing to all of a sudden, you know, a month later, I guess, just battling for a championship and still having to respect the 450 and the power and the pace that we're going to, and not overriding it.
Okay. You know, some of the things that you've exposed yourself to or that have opened up for you down south, you've been to some pretty spectacular facilities and working with guys like Mike Brown. Let's talk about that aspect of it, the physical aspect. How old are you now, Jess?
24.
Okay, 24 years old, and I think back to when you were on the 65 with all that leg swag. I mean, your body, your girth right now, I mean, you're a big kid now.
Yeah, it's good just growing and getting stronger and maturing, you know, and I think the way I've played my career, it's been good so far. I mean, I got a couple championships in the 250 class, and then moving up to the premier class at, you know, 24, it's I think it's kind of the right steps, and yeah, I'm enjoying the process so far. Hopefully get back down to the States, and I feel like I still got a lot of unfinished business down there. I mean, last season was a bummer. I was feeling really good, and then didn't quite get to show my potential that I knew I was capable of. So my real big goal is to go down there and make it happen and kind of see where I fit in and go from there, give it my best shot, and get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for sure, and give us Canadians something to cheer for. And, you know, I got to think that's just going to increase here, watching this Supercross deal wrap up from Gopher Dunes and seeing our pool of kids coming up behind you from the West, all those fast guys out in the East right there. I just have a feeling we're going to see more test the waters of Supercross as a result of what's going on up here in Canada.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I've obviously done it for a couple of years now. You know, I've had some good results and kind of put myself on the map a little bit as far as Canadians going down to the U.S. and making it happen. And to be honest, we got some really good talent up here. Our field's not too deep. You know, obviously after both classes, after the five or six place guys, it kind of drops off. But, man, we got some good guys. I mean, a couple of the top 250 guys right now, they're going well, and they got some speed and a bright future. And then, yeah, I mean, myself and Dylan Wright and a couple of Canadians, we – in the 450 class, like I think a few of us go down to the States, whether it's AMA Pro Motocross or Supercross, you know, I'd like to see more of them do it in the future and give it a shot. That being said, I mean, it's tough too. I mean, I've done it all completely on my own, and it's a pretty, pretty big commitment, and money wise and just your body, everything, you know, it's another level. And, you know, you got to be willing to take that risk, I guess, both financially and just physically going out there and doing that. But I don't want to cut myself short. You know, I want to give it my best effort and see what happens. If it doesn't work out, I mean, I can always fall back to Canada. But, I mean, I always look at a Jet Lawrence or some of those guys that come over to the U.S. and they make it big. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
For sure. So right now you're kind of in reset mode. I talked to you, you're coming down the hill. Maybe you want to share with my listeners where you were. Maybe you don't. Tell us about the recovery program, how it sits, and what we can look forward to, because we're going to ramp up really quick here into the fall after Motocross the Nations, and it'll be soon time to talk about Supercross.
Yeah, right now I'm just taking the time to kind of recover my body. It's been a while, honestly, if I'm being honest, that my body's been 100%. I mean, the head, two knee reconstructions in the last 2 years and then hurt my back. So I think just give my body the time I need now. I mean, I have the time and, you know, just not push it. I want to be 100% when I line up next. So just doing a lot of, you know, physiotherapy, stretching, massage, light workouts, kind of just keeping everything light for now and make sure I'm, you know, all good to go. It's a hard thing also mentally, you know, keep that process going. When the goal is kind of far away, but just enjoying it for now. And then should be good, you know, get the body 100% and really see what I'm capable of when I line up.
Well, I look forward to it, my friend. I know that there is a whole army of people that have your back, and going back to the Supercross deal there, shout out to JSR. I know that he pulled really hard for you and did a lot of things. Cal, Skinny, you know, your mom and dad and everybody else, it's always got your back. Good on those people for doing it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. No, there's obviously an endless amount of people that help me get to where I'm at. You know, even in the States, making it happen. I know there's a big fan base, I guess, when I go down there, and people, you know, behind the scenes even helping me or willing to help me and support me to be down there. So, I mean, if it wasn't for all those people, my team, obviously they're amazing. The Factory Red Bull KTM team, suspension guys, the mechanics, Matt, Nico, everyone, like my family, all the sacrifices everyone's made. It's good. Looking forward to getting my body back to 100% and make that shot down there.
Well, again, I look forward to it, my friend. I can't thank you enough for your time in Walton here tonight. Good luck. You're headed off to your grandfather's 90th birthday. That's really cool.
Yeah, you betcha. No, it should be good. Spent a little bit of family time and all that back home, so catching up on that because I'm obviously busy season traveling all over the place, so enjoy it while I can, and yeah.
All right. Well, from Gisela and I, happy birthday to Gramps and a big hello to Mom and Dad. And I'll just give the rest to Kevin, and I look forward to catching up with you soon, Jess. All the best, my friend.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, and look forward to more of it in the future.
Yeah, Jess, congratulations on a great year, and thanks so much for being on the show as well. I look forward to seeing you at the future races. When will we see you in Canada again? Are you going to be doing anything this year with us, or are you just waiting until the Supercross, or are you able to speak to that right now?
As far as the Canada stuff right now, I mean, there's not a whole lot going on. Maybe we'll do some local racing in the fall time here, but I think for now I'm just healing my body up, and then I might have to head out to Montreal area, do a little bit of testing in the next month, and then hopefully my plan, if all, you know, everything goes well, then head down to either Florida or California and start the process for Supercross training. So kind of just set my focus on that and make sure I'm good to go for that.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it.
All right, Jess. Be well, my friend, and we'll look forward to catching up with you real soon.
Will do. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
See you, Jess.
All right, Kevin. Forwarded me some stuff earlier via an email that we've been talking about, the traumatic experiences that can occur at any point in life and can include violence, accidents, sudden unexpected loss, natural disaster, examples, fires, earthquakes, floods, and war. The brain's response to traumatic event, e.g. witnessing a serious motor vehicle accident, may affect people in different ways. If the event is perceived to challenge or threaten an individual's personal sense or safety, self and self-efficacy, then coping with memories of that event may become very difficult. Memory also may be affected either in forgetting key parts of what happened or in the sudden, intense, sporadic memories that we call flashbacks. A person's mood can shift too, and depression, irritability, jumpiness, and avoidance can become common. I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, so you're describing trauma, and one of the things about trauma is that it's on a continuum. Everybody at some point has experienced trauma. Listening to Jess talk about, you know, re-tearing his ACL, riding with a fractured sternum, broken arm. There's a person who's had setbacks. There's a person who's had sudden losses that he's had to contend with. There's a guy whose goals got thwarted quickly, had things occur outside of his expectations and outside of his control. And when that kind of thing happens, the perception of what those events mean become really key. And we heard some really awesome things from Jess, and I'm just going to use him as an example because he gave so many good examples of how he responded to these events, right? He responded to them by saying, well, you know, progress, I still have progress, I still have unfinished business. He mentioned he still got lots to learn, he wants to take his time, he wants to give 100%, he said he's competitive. These are all really super positive ways of dealing with traumatic occurrences and traumatic kinds of events. Now, I'm just using motocross examples. Obviously, there's lots of other kinds of traumatic examples that we could speak to, but I'm just using our conversation with Jess as kind of a takeoff point, because how he articulated his perception of these setbacks becomes really kind of key for what recovery looks like. And when you have a good attitude about recovery, you end up recovering a lot faster.
Yeah, and the other key that you touched on, and I've read over and over again, and I'll do it again, we need these kind of role models, because There simply are not enough counselors to go around. Trauma counseling from a counselor, psychologist, or psychiatrist simply involves helping people develop skills to cope adaptively with memories of their adverse experiences. But opportunities for healing are not limited to whether one can get service from a counselor, psychologist, or psychiatrist. Learning to cope is always progressive. It is never instantaneous. It is never guaranteed. Just because you participated in some kind of 30-day program or retreat. So when we see a racer on TV displaying incredible determination and grit, we learn vicariously through the TV screen to demonstrate some of those same kinds of attributes ourselves. Over time, that becomes incredibly adaptive and helpful for survivors of trauma. So listen up, motocross title contenders. Your work ethic and determination you show on TV can have a very positive influence and can positively impact a far bigger audience in a far bigger way than you were ever aware of. I, for one, feel that Jess Pettis should have been paid double his earnings this year. After that incredible display at the last outdoor round, it absolutely shocked me as much as it inspired me. We need people with this kind of determination and grit because trauma is so incredibly common. You would have an easier time finding a professional level motocross racer who has never been roosted than you would find someone who has not experienced a significant trauma event in their lives. Well, he'd have to be an awfully good starter, but I kind of agree with you there. Trauma is very common in the motocross world and life in general.
Oh, it's incredible. If you look at some of the stats across Canadians, and there's different studies that have been done across different provinces, but across all Canadians, 76% of all Canadian adults report some kind of traumatic exposure in their lifetime, and almost 10% at any given time they meet the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. And you break it down into groups, like 50% of all Canadian women and 33% of Canadian men have survived at least one incident of physical or sexual violence. I mean, if that hasn't happened to you, then that's great, but you know people that it's happened to. I mean, this is one in two, right? And that's just one kind of trauma, right? That's just sexual abuse kind of trauma. There's other kinds of trauma, you know, car accidents, earthquakes, fires, floods, natural disasters, economic violence. Those kinds of things can really impact a person's trajectory.
Yeah.
And so when we think about motocross in particular, we think about these guys that have, and girls, that have this incredible resilience. And so they learn something along the way in the motocross community that actually could be very protective outside of the motocross community, that can kind of protect them in other domains as well from being victims of circumstance. And this is what's so incredible, and this is why I'm so excited to be on this show, because I think it's in part celebrating people. And Brent, you're one of them who has had to overcome major adversity. And, you know, and the bad news about trauma is that you're never the same person after the trauma as you were before. But the good news, if people work hard at it and people look at others who have gone through it themselves, like Jess Pettis or you, Brent, or even Tanner Ward, you end up becoming a way better person, stronger, wiser, kinder, smarter than you ever were before the trauma. And it ends up in a paradoxical way being almost a blessing. So I'm glad that we're able to talk about this and we're able to share some of this with listeners tonight. And you're darn right. Jess Pettis should be paid 10 times what he got this year because he's going to have
such
an incredible...
Hey, that was my idea. You talk to KTM. Jess is my bud, but...
JSR, I'm going to ring you up.
Hey, I haven't even seen JSR around. I'm sure he's still involved somewhere, but that's not my business.
Yeah, it's... You know, Jess is going to be a great inspiration and a good teacher for that kind of resilience. And the truth is, you know, people can watch others who have been through adverse experiences and watch how they adapted. And that in itself can actually be helpful.
Yeah. Like,
there aren't enough therapists and counselors and doctors to go around, but we can have really strong role models. And that can be really, really important and really incredible for helping people that have been displaced in some way by trauma to recover.
And something that I've learned too, I've learned a lot about this thanks to you, your work, and you know, my own desire to learn more about the mental health aspect of trauma and some of the triggers and things like hypervigilance and the circadian cycle and all those fancy words that come up when your life is so gravely impacted and disrupted. And, you know, to be able to sit here with you and share some of it based on my personal experience, I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, I am too. One of the things that keeps people from coming forward is stigma, right? They feel in some way they brought events upon themselves. They feel in some way almost that they deserved it or that they asked for it. And that's the irony of trauma.
Guilt is horrible for me. I hate feeling like a piece of dew and stewing in whatever. And it's just a really uncomfortable place to be for anyone when you internalize and let it manifest and don't talk about it. Unfortunately for me, I've found a way to talk about it with you, with my wife, and things don't take root that don't need to be there anymore. And it's that simple. And there is no blueprint. So many people ask me, you know, when things happen or go sideways, you know, did you see it coming? You know, I will be the first one to say I've struggled with mental health issues my whole life, but I'm happy with who I am today. And I've learned that there's no blueprint for it. I've learned that the biggest thing that you could hold in the way of succeeding is your desire to want to be well and to know that you're a good person and to know that you're not damaged goods and that your thoughts matter. They always matter. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all different. It's finding that and accepting it. And for me, it's been revolutionary because I've been away from what I love for way too long because I've been suffering with PTSD. And, you know, most of my listeners out there would assume it's from my spinal cord injury, and that's not even close. Not even close.
No, no. But spinal cord injury, if I'm to be blunt, created this opportunity for you to step up and be even bigger than what you were before. Here we are talking on the radio about the mental health that is common to everybody. And it's that stigma, it's that shame, it's that guilt that keeps people from pursuing getting well.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody listening to this tonight, they're taking a first step right now to kicking stigma in the butt and getting it out of their own lives, because here we are, we're doing something about it. And we're trying to encourage people, look, you can't control having been injured by somebody else's poor decision, but you absolutely can control the outcome, and you can control your future. And in fact, you have to, because others won't do it for you. The people that you may have been hurt by aren't going to recognize it and then come apologize and then help you recover.
Right.
That falls back onto us. And once you realize that, boy, is that freeing. That's liberating. You realize that what you were being held prisoner by actually was some of your own thinking. The shame and the guilt. And anybody that's ever been injured or traumatized or victimized, that says nothing about your quality and your value. That says only stuff about the person that perpetuated that on you. Your value is independent of what happened to you.
All right, Kevin,
so
I'm going to shift
recognizing
gears. Sorry about that. I cut you off.
I could talk for a long time on this. I'll let you shift gears.
No, and you know what? You have all night, my friend, and my apologies for cutting you off. But trying to ramp up the showtime here, there's so many moving parts. Getting back from Walton not that long ago, and the missus and I are in the middle of a million different things, all positive. But I just couldn't wait to get this first episode on the air with you. And everybody else that's tuned in, I thank you all for tuning in. Hopefully some of you will be able to log in and hit up that interactive chat board. We did the Canadian Motor Show. We had quite a few on there. We will get to the giveaways here soon. But let's talk about the big event that was part and parcel of the Walton Transcan this year, at least for the missus and I. 3 weeks before the gate dropped at Walton, I looked at Gisela and I said, let's go out to Walton Raceway and support Tanner Ward and everybody else is going to be there in the name of mental health and the ride with me and ride out to what eventually turned out to be the cowbell. What a hoot that was. Major sacrifice by both Gisela and I to get it done. We took a lot of cool things out there. We shared our story with people that were, you know, keen enough to come by and talk about mental health. We had some banners made up and a few other posters. And as the week evolved, it just turned, everything just accelerated in the way of positivity and warmth. And being able to do that has turned out to be, you know, the most rewarding thing that I've personally done this year. And, you know, after that, I have just, all I can think about is going back. I want to get a new bike and I want to challenge myself and I want to challenge others to come out there and support it, because I knew it was going to be rewarding. It was a personal deal for me. It was 10 years, 10 years ago, Gisela and I packed up brand new 2011 350 KTM and I crashed on the first lap of the plus 40 class. I wanted the podium and I wanted it too bad. And the rest is history. 10 years later, it was my goal to go out there in the name of mental health and my own fortitude and finish the race that I started. And I'm so proud to sit here and tell you that I finished that 31K with the biggest smile on my face. And everybody I spoke to for about an hour got the verbal diarrhea of a man who was probably on the most illicit drug of all, and that is life.
Well, I saw some of your videos that you sent back, and it looked like you had a lot of fun. And, you know, if the health authority next year permits it, I'd love to get out there. The Walton looks like a beautiful area. And so many cool people that you caught on the video. And I liked how you pole positioned. You're right up there with Tanner when this thing kicked off. So I thought that was awesome.
Well, I figured if I got close enough to the front, when they went by me, they had sucked me far enough along in their wake. But, I mean, shout out to Brett Lee, Mel, Chris, Walton Raceway, Tanner Ward, Troy and Sandra Smith, Maple Ridge Motorsports, Dave Bell, Wizenar Insurance, Ron Camera, Roland, Giesel's brother, Courtney Lloyd, Jeff Ward, Cindy. Oh, man, everybody, it was just, there was so much love there at Walton Raceway this year. And, man, I don't know if it's what I've been through personally or what the whole world's been through in the way of a war with the pandemic, but I don't think I heard the C word more than twice in 5 days at the racetrack.
Yeah, it looked like an awesome time, and I think everybody's kind of COVID fatigued. So everybody wanted to get there and see some good racing and see a good show. And certainly at home watching it on TV, man, it looked like a great show. And I wish I was there live.
Yeah, it was great. The rough weather that usually shows up that qualifies the true championship that event is was early in the event. And as it evolved into Pro Sunday, the ride was on Championship Saturday. The weather was phenomenal. And as I said, it was just so much fun to be a part of. And I can't thank those guys enough, because what they do, it's a true annual celebration of Canadian motocross. And it's in a part of the world that, unless you've been there's nowhere else like it, in my opinion. I mean, I'm a farm boy. I grew up in Chilliwack in the Fraser Valley, but that Huron County Seaforth out there towards Goderich, it is truly God's country. And I will be back.
Awesome. Yeah, I hope to get out there one of these years too, Brent, to catch it live, bring my camera and just have some fun. It looked like everybody there was having fun, really, truly. And the racers, even on their interviews, were saying, yeah, what a fun track. So it looked awesome. And these guys, Brent and Melody, they did a great job. And it you can tell it's a passion for them. It's a passion first. And what an atmosphere they created. So, yeah, hats off to them.
For sure. So if you want to add any more to the post-traumatic stress disorder topic that we've kind of raised, we've gone over that document that I posted there. You know, there's just different things. And it was really compelling for me to be able to share some of my experiences and watch people over the course of the week, you know, maybe want to talk about some of the things or just acknowledge the fact that these are real resonating life issues, not so much issues, but triggers of underlying issues that might not be recognized unless they're pointed to somewhere where they could be diagnosed.
Yeah, well, I'm really thankful for this opportunity, because trauma has two kinds of impacts. It has, you know, the first initial impact, right? The shock and the, you know, the fear and that kind of response. And then there's a secondary issue, like after the person is out of danger, still some of the underlying anxiety and fear-based symptoms. And the two things that we really watch for would be the first one's called anhedonia. And that's just a big fancy word for saying a loss of interest in the things that you usually take pleasure in. So a person maybe doesn't want to go out as much, doesn't want to see their friends, doesn't want to play their Xbox as much. That's a loss of interest, and it's very subtle, and it's very easy to say, well, I'm just tired. I don't want to go see anybody tonight. I don't want to go to the movies. I don't want to go out and get a burger. It sounds reasonable, but it may be one of those things that you have to watch for, which may require, a person to go talk to their doctor. The second one is what we call dysphoria. And what that is just a low level of depression. Now, lots of people that have experienced trauma, they still get up and go to work. They still get up and earn a living and make their car payments and they interact, but they're doing it without the joy or the gratitude or the peace of mind. They're doing it maybe with some hypervigilance. They're doing it with a guarded, protective kind of stance. And again, it can look very, very subtle, but the effects over time, if these things aren't checked out, they can really rob a person of tenderness and closeness and connection and relationships. It can rob a person of their physical health. It can rob a person of their mental health. It can derail chasing goals. So it can have a lot of subtle effects. So if you're somebody who's listening, who's been impacted in some way, shape, or form by trauma, look, everybody has. Please don't just say, well, my trauma wasn't as bad as others. Do yourself a favor. Show yourself the same love that you'd show a friend who was telling you the same story. Get some support. Go find a mentor. Go talk to your family doctor. Go talk to a counselor. Go talk to your pastor. Go talk to your best friend. But don't suffer in silence. Please don't suffer in silence.
Yeah.
Brent, go ahead.
No, I'm listening.
My last point, and I'll let you jump in, is everybody's been impacted by trauma, and there's a funny saying in the counseling world: people go into counseling to fix themselves, and that's kind of true for me. I'm still fixing myself. I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm still fixing myself. There's still things I want to work on. There's still things I want to get better at. There's still things I want to forget. And if I can't forget them, then maybe I can integrate memories of those experiences into my day-to-day life where I'm not triggered by them. So please love yourself enough that you can kick the stigma to the curb and get some support if you're somebody that's still struggling with trauma.
Right. And one of the things that I've discovered, as I said, there is no blueprint, and what works for one may not work for another. To me, the worst thing you can do is ask somebody what their doctor has prescribed them or what they're doing from a medical standpoint, because we are all so uniquely different. We just have to be able to find people that we trust and can confide in. And if we can do that, based on my personal experience, there is an opportunity to recover, because everything that you have cited, speaking about trauma, I've experienced, and it's been rough the last few years.
Yeah, for sure. And medication doesn't work uniformly. Some people metabolize it okay, and some don't.
Right.
And some people have, hesitations to use medications. My own stance on it is it can be helpful for some, but it should be considered kind of a short-term thing until you can develop a routine where you're approaching things that you were avoiding and you're less fearful to, take risks and go out and enjoy life again. So the medication, mm-hmm. it should complement counseling. It shouldn't replace it. And it could complement hanging out with your friends. It shouldn't replace it. But it has its place, and it's not for everybody, but it has its place sometime. And, if you're not so sure, and talk to your doctor. Don't mm-hmm. talk to your friends, because they'll give you an answer that's going to vary depending on who you speak with. But go talk to your doctor if that's one thing that you think you may need. But having the support and the support from friends is really, really key.
One of the key components for me is to keep moving forward no matter what. And in a body that hates me daily, it's the hardest thing to do. But it is so rewarding. It's just, I don't know why, with the physical strife, it just, It's so invigorating to be able to go out and do something. Like today, Giesel and I went for 15K. It wasn't that hot. And honestly, today, for the first time in about 3 months, I felt like I could go all day. And I lived for that. And it felt so good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're right. You do have to keep going. You can't stay still, because then you're at risk of your mind replaying the events over and over in your head. And then you become a prisoner in your own mind. And you can't do that. One of the racers, I just want to share a quick reflection with you. One
All
of the
right,
racers
just,
that inspired me the
just,
most.
Just so you know, no pressure now, but Ryan Lockhart, the Swiss Army knife of Canadian motocross, has been texted. He will be on the show here shortly.
Awesome. I look forward to chatting with him too. I just wanted to give a bit of a shout out to Tyler Gibbs, because he had an Instagram post that came out about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, of him sitting in a hospital bed with casts from his toes to his knee. And he's sitting there, thumbs up, and he says, "Hey, guys, I got a new pair of boots today." Now, he's got two broken legs. But he was thanking everybody for wishing him well. And he said, "This is just a small bump in the road to meeting my moto success. Thanks for all the well wishes."
Wow.
And it's that keeping going. It's that keeping going that's so important. So, Brent, I'm glad that you got out for a bike ride today. That's so important, doing something physical, getting your cardiovascular going, get some fresh air, doing something social with your wife, getting out in your community. Those are all things that help people to recover. And again, recovery is going to be progressive, not instant. So people have to be realistic in expecting it to be progressive. It will take some time, but it's attainable. That's
yeah, we'll attainable. Get for sure. It is a process, and we strive for progress, I guess, of any kind. All right. Just grab yourself a snack if you're tuned in back wherever you are tuned in here. I'm going to grab the man we like to call the people's favorite here at Motocross Save My Life. His name is Mr. Ryan Lockhart. Bear with us. The chair on the air will be right back. We are back Saturday, September 4th, first ever Motocross Save My Life Mental Health Radio live podcast. Welcome to the show. A man that we coined the people's favorite back in the Canadian Moto Show days, Mr. Ryan Lockhart. How the heck are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Brent. Thanks for having me. People's favorite, that goes back a few years, so I don't know if we still claim that title anymore.
Well, hey, when you're old, it's gold. And on the note of gold, we're going to get into the Walton Transcan. But what a bucket list career moment for this old guy to be able to introduce 1980 Maritimes champion Yamaha Motor Canada rider Scott Lockhart to the young man by the name of Casey Keast at the Walton Transcan. That was an honor.
Yeah, no, for sure. Walton was a bit of a highlight for me this year, obviously racing and stuff like that. And had my dad there and stuff was kind of pretty neat, right? Obviously my son racing too, so a few generations.
Yeah, and it's been a busy year, and we'll back it up and we'll get back to the start because we're wide open on so many things. And, you know, that's one of the best parts about this sport is there's something to look forward to around the calendar. And, you know, one of the key components that I've decided anyway into success is lining up and racing. It just seems that the kids that are lined up over and over again have the success. We saw a lot of that today with, you know, Gibbsy, Piccolo and all of them from the West out there at the Triple Crown Series. But I want to introduce you to my co-host. His name is... Kevin Lefebvre, you know him, I won't say well, but you know who he is. You've seen him around the track, and he did some amazing work helping showcase the sport we love. Kevin, welcome to the show, or welcome Ryan Lockhart to the show, would you?
Hey, Ryan, it's good to have you on the show. Glad to hear your voice again.
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin, man. It was good. You did a fantastic little trailer to this podcast that's going down, so I was looking forward to it. And yeah, always a pleasure catching up with both you guys. Obviously I get to catch up with Brent a little bit more than you, Kevin, but always great to see you at the track, and you take some banger photos, that's for sure.
Thanks man.
Yeah, and I got to share that celebration video with Jeff Pettis, but he didn't see the unedited version that you got.
Yeah, I've been there.
No, you gotta
been
send
there,
that
done
off.
That been there, done that.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to say is it was a ton of fun wrapping up a year that, you know, honestly, when the gate dropped on January, yeah, we had Supercross and everything, and poor Jess got hurt, and the Canadian dream kind of went down the tube in that regard, and there was no real set date for the MRC Triple Crown, and, you know, we knew it was going to start back east, but what a decent year it was, and I can't say enough about getting back there to see it wrap up because it was a good season. Hats off to MRC and the Triple Crown Series and all involved making it happen. And it wasn't just those guys. They had some help from some other foot soldiers too.
No, absolutely. And you know what, like being part of this whole, you know, circus or game or whatever you want to call it, Galdi called it a circus today on TV, which I guess could be in the grand scheme of things, but being part of it during the first year of COVID, I mean, it was, you know, who knew what was going to happen, you know, what was going to go down and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, last year was okay. And, you know, we did the Ontario thing and we didn't end up getting to go to Quebec and whatnot. But this year, you know, it obviously it started off on a better foot. We're in a better place during the whole pandemic and stuff like that. And being able to have fans back at the races, it's crazy like what it does to your mental space, whether you're a rider, whether you're a team owner, whether you're a mechanic, whatever your position is on the whole paddock. It makes a huge difference to have people there, whether it's photographers, videographers, fans of the sport, you, Brent, everybody. It makes a huge difference when you have people there. And man, that was what this series needed. I mean, like I said, the first year of the pandemic, it was a bit of a, you know, we were racing and the racing was great, but this year just kind of gave it, I mean, obviously it wasn't normal, but kind of gave it a little bit of normalcy, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And we had some good dialogue there. I didn't put it in the video edit for the ride, but to watch KT and the way he put it in those terms, it was so true. Last year, you know, I think he said they ran that race on like bare bones staff. And I mean, that's a big deal for these outfits. And that's a lot of the things that don't get talked about behind the scenes. I mean, I was really keen to see where Digger took advantage of the situation and totally revamped that Gopher Dunes facility. But I mean, COVID was a big hit. One could argue that the industry, you know, sold this, that, and the other thing because everybody is sitting home buying things with nothing else better to do. But it was a big hit on the racing aspect of it.
Well, and I think that like a lot of people need to realize, like from a fan perspective, like these guys, Derek Schuster, Kevin Tyler, the guys in Quebec, you know, Brett Lee, you know, them doing these races, it's not a moneymaker for them right now. I mean, they're obviously this year was better than the previous year, but they were doing this out of the pure gold of their heart in order to keep this thing going because we couldn't shut down. Oh, well, obviously we could, but that wasn't going to do any good for our young talent in the sport. It wasn't going to do any good for the current talent in our sport, as well as the guys that are on their way out. You know, look how many guys we saw retire last year from, you know, well, I guess not how many guys, but, you know, we saw Matt Gerke retire last year. That would have been tragic if we couldn't have ran a series. You know what I mean? These guys made nothing last year. It's not a money-making scheme for them. Even the best of years when they can put, you know, 3,000-4,000 spectators on their property. Yeah, of course they're making a little bit of money, but it's not a get rich quick thing for them. So, you know, really what you've seen over the last couple of years, you know, Ryan Gauls, Kevin Tyler, Brett Lee, Derek Schuster, you know, obviously the Thompsons, Jetworks, the whole crew. I mean, that's the core of the sport right now. And they're doing it, you know, obviously to hopefully that things come around in the next few years and this and that. And I mean, you watch the races. I was at a lot of the races. You were at a couple. Kevin, you probably watched them all on TV. I mean, it was great racing, man. Why would you not want to be a fan of that? Like, that came down, the outdoor championship came down to the last round. The Supercross championship came down to the last main event. The Triple Crown came down to the last main event for the 250s. Why would you not want to be a fan of that? It was awesome, and I'm thankful to be obviously involved in it and be a fan of the sport to see that type of excitement. I mean, that's great. It's almost better than the AMA stuff from a standpoint.
Yeah, and you know what? Right down to the end, those last 10 or 11 guys lined up in that final main there, just they're all throwing down hard. I was so bummed for young Ethan Ouellette there. He blew that first turn. He had a good jump and came in there a little bit hot. But I mean, kids like that, the dedication, the passion and commitment, and, you know, should they decide to line up at the Future West Arena Cross or wherever else they go after here, everybody's going to know where they've been racing because it's next level.
At the end of the day, we all want our little spotlight, you know what I mean? That is what it is, and that keeps us going and our dedication to the sport. And I mean, I loved it. I thought, you know what, we were missing some highlighters in the series, you know what I mean? We lost Pettis, obviously, and you know, Welton got hurt and whatnot and this and that, but it was – everybody's looking for the little piece of the pie, and it was great to see them highlight, you know, the Western Rosinas. You know, that's a great story right there. That Western Rosina is a awesome story from there. Obviously, Davey Fraser is a great story too. But I go back to the Rosina story from Supercross. I mean, there's a guy right there that was a hot shot right out of the amateur ranks, had success at Loretta's. He had the storybook career. I mean, he did well. He's a Canadian kid. Did well at Loretta's, moved in, got a deal with GDR Honda, your dream ride for Canadian motocross, got hurt, couldn't get the results, struggled, lost his ride, struggled as a privateer, couldn't make it work, and goes back to the working force, gets a job, comes back to find the fun in racing, riding the premix class at the Canadian level, gets a shot, wins two premix championships, however big you want to make those, it is what it is. Comes
that's
back,
huge
gets a
for
shot
this old
on,
guy. It's top step for this
exactly.
old guy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Gets a shot on MX-101, goes out and is a solid podium guy. It doesn't matter who's there at the end of the day. You're on the podium. It's awesome. Good
hey,
for him. And guess what? He's probably going to get on a team next year. He's going to get a ride. It's great.
You, You know what is so bizarre about this whole thing is when Giesel and I pulled out a Walt in there, like trying to get me out of the racetrack on the last day usually takes 2 hours if I say I'm leaving. I mean, that whole show down there at the GDR rig, I got that interview with Tanner. We gave him the check for the ride,
yeah.
And I was underneath, and I thought I was going to ask for a helmet. I thought stuff was coming down off that truck on us. But even worse than that, before I committed to a line to get down that hill there, all of a sudden I could feel a dark shadow at the side of me, and I felt a foot hit the ground, and I could see it was Digger coming, and he wasn't moving, and he grazed off the side of me. He hit me a good one, and I stayed up. I kept my arms pinned, and yeah, it was pretty sketchy there. Had a few close calls and moments, but you know, just to be there, to wrap it all up like that, and to have those moments, and you know, after the year we had been through, it was just a bucket list thing for me.
Well, it's what we love, right? I mean, we love it. We love being part of it. There's no argument. You can tell people may think we're crazy, but we're not. We just love, we have passion, right?
That's what it's all about. But anyway, I got derailed there. On the way out, Weston came up to the window and we had a good chat with him. And he challenged himself because he was really successful on that Super Mini CRF 150 coming up through the ranks. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he won his Walton Championship on that. And that year that you talk about, 2014, I was actually, Derek was good enough to put us up at the GDR rig. That was my first year back there after my injury. Yeah. And the amount of pressure he put on himself, I could see it, I could feel it, and it just didn't go his way. And, you know, he talked about that. He talked about the struggles. He talked about the toll, the emotional toll, the toll it has on family, everything. So to see that come full circle and to have that feel-good moment and to be able to celebrate it, it's just, that's what it's all about.
Well, and it's a great story, and that's, like, what I touched on. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, every family's gone through it. There's no perfect story to get into the top, and some people make it and some people don't. It's very few that make it, and that's in any professional sport. And we all know that here on the phone. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, you sacrifice a lot, whether you're a parent, whether you're the rider, you sacrifice a lot. I mean, some people go different paths and this and that, but I feel that is a great story to tell to any up-and-coming kid, how he had it, how he lost it, how he got it back. But when he got it back, I don't want to say he's made it, because that's not anything of the truth, but how he's found the fun in it again. And I think you can see that in his face. Like, he's stoked to be on the podium. And I think that's what it's all about. I mean, that's something that when he was 15 years old, 16 years old, 17 years old, that's what you always dream of. And you have probably more potential, more opportunity to get it at that young age, but it takes some time. It takes more than just talent to get on that podium. And I mean, we've seen that time and time again where, you know, there's plenty of fast guys on the track, but, you know, you got to have the full package to do it.
Yeah, definitely a feel-good moment for sure. And as I said, glad I was there to experience that and get that from Weston, because the way the year's gone for the MX 101 team, it's nice to finish it off on a positive note for sure. Hey, one of the riders that you helped along the way, Ryder McNabb, I don't want to do this without talking about him. Let's talk about his season and getting that first win. Man, it just seems like yesterday he was winning plus 60 or 65 cc championships at Walton Raceway when we were doing the live broadcast there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was a good season for Ryder, and there's no question. I mean, the kid puts in the work, and, you know, I think it's important for people to understand, and my involvement as a quote-unquote mechanic for Ryder, that's a loose term. I'm not necessarily a factory team mechanic by any means. I do work on the bike, and I do, you know, the in-between stuff and whatnot, but I'm not doing motors or anything by those means. I'm more there for Ryder. I mean, a lot of people forget that he's 15 years old, and I forget sometimes too, which is crazy. The kid has maturity well beyond his years. He can carry on a conversation just like the three of us are having here on the phone right now at 15 years old. So I've been with Ryder for 2 years. I don't know what's going to happen next year, whether he stays up here or he goes south or whatnot. I know he has another year left on his contract, but it was awesome working with him. It's fun to see him progress. Obviously, I was with him with his through his last amateur career or amateur season as an intermediate. And, you know, we get along well and jibe, but, man, I wish I had that that drive and that talent. I mean, talent maybe not so much, but drive as a 15-year-old. I mean, you know how hard that is, Brent. I mean, you were there as a mini cycle rider and whatnot. It's a tricky slope to maintain.
Yeah, for sure. 1981, I was 15. I graduated to the big bike class on a 125. In fact, that's probably as fast as I ever was on a motorcycle, but it is a transition, and just putting that age in perspective validates the bright future ahead.
Totally.
I did hear something in the broadcast Goldie mentioned, and I want to throw this out there. Two of the first people that I was introduced to by Ryan Gold when we showed up there on Pro Sunday was Goldie's parents, and I had never met them before. It was so cool to meet Ryan's parents. His mom had a big smile on her face, and his dad, who I'm sure you know, it was great to meet them. And Ryan came over and bought a book and went to work for the day, and he left us his golf cart, which I didn't even use except for a wheel chalk. And I can't thank Ryan Gold enough for his efforts all season long.
I think it's, you know, Goldie's, you know, he has many different hands in the series and this and that, and some people love him and some people don't choose to like him. But one thing that is important to know that he always has the best interest in the sport, and I think that's important. I mean, it's cool to see him come full circle with his family. I mean, he did it a lot as a younger kid with just his mom and stuff like that. And you know, they're both involved now helping him. Obviously, Goldie is not, you know, he's a 43-year-old promoter of the races, and he's done a fantastic job, and, you know, ex-racer and stuff like that. And he's, you know, he's killed it in Ontario. I mean, the scene is awesome, and he's done a fantastic job, like I said. So the series needs him, regardless of what, you know, whatnot, but the series needs him. I mean, his passion's there, and the whole reason, you know, we're all talking like this is the passion of the sport. I mean, if you have no passion, then it's hard to light the flame.
No, absolutely. And he's probably not listening anyway, so it won't fill his head too full. But I'm going to go as far as to say without his efforts, motocross wouldn't have been what it was this year in Ontario, because the legal hoops that he had to jump through, dotting all of the proverbial COVID I's and crossing the T's, was pretty phenomenal. And, you know, shout out to the Lee family, Brett, Chris, everybody involved with Walton too. There was some things that they had to do, but they stayed on top of protocol and everything was done properly. And I don't think there was not one case come out of any of the racing in Ontario this year that I've heard of.
No, Goldie number one for sure. There's no question. And I'll stamp that, and friends with all those guys, but Goldie number one for sure. And then, like I said, you got the team of Brett and Mel and Derek and Kerry and Kevin and his wife. I mean, that's the core of the sport back there. And obviously that's shown. And that's the reason why we're racing back there right now. And I mean, you know, I have high hopes for next year. I've already heard some rumblings and seen kind of a tentative type schedule that we're coming back west next year, which we need for sure. We need it. I mean, there's no question. I mean, the teams need it. The OEMs need it. The dealers need it. The riders need it to do a legit national series again. And I mean, it's been legit the last 2 years. I mean, obviously this year more so than last, but I have high hopes. But let's just keep our fingers crossed and let's get through this damn thing and keep pushing forward.
Absolutely. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Dylan Wright. Dylan, what a warrior, the way he threw down this year, getting the title, repeating. Wow, what a boss out there on the 450. You look really good.
Well, yeah, warrior is probably the right word. I mean, there's no question Dylan's body was not in great shape coming into the season. He's got some knee injuries that he's been dealing with over time and this and that. But, man, he, you know, coming in, did podcasts with Steve Mathis and Ryan Gold for the Canadian preview show for the Nationals. We all picked Dylan, not knowing the severity of his injuries. You know, we picked him like, who's going to touch him? I mean, we figured that he was going to dominate, especially with Gurky out and T-Dags kind of doing a part-time thing, which ended up being a full-time thing. And Nicoletti gone, obviously. Nicoletti was his biggest competition, but Pettis arose to the occasion. There's no question with limited prep. But Dylan was fighting the whole time with different things. He had no time for testing on that new chassis and this and that. But no excuses. I mean, he was the fastest guy, but man, his starts weren't great, and he just kind of powered through, and he lucked out, or not lucked out, but luck was on his side a little bit, and he stayed healthy through some major crashes, and that's where I come into the luck on some major crashes that he had. Mm-hmm. He bounced like a rubber man on the ground, and man, he was tough, and I'm excited to see what he can do at Motocross the Nations. I hope that he can get some starts, because he's an underrated guy. I mean, we haven't seen him a whole lot in the U.S., but Motocross of Nations, you know, he seems like he's pushing hard for it. He's putting in the time. Hopefully his arm's healed up, and like we kind of saw that on his Instagram this week. It's still pretty cut open, but he's on the road bike. And
yeah,
I have big things for him, like Kevin Benoit-ish type things from 2017 mm-hmm. Motocross of Nations. I hope he can turn some heads.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's such a big race, and you know, I just have a feeling he's going to keep the adrenaline going somehow and do us all proud. He looked really good today physically on the broadcast with Kyle Thompson and Galdi there, and I did see that Instagram too. That was a pretty nasty gash, but when things go bad, I mean, fortunately he was wearing that Atlas neck brace and he landed in the position he did, and it kind of offloaded, but man, that can never feel good.
The thing is with Dylan, it doesn't matter how bad it goes, somehow he can rebound. And that's something that all of us here and all of us that are listening could love to learn. Like, he can be down in the dumps and, you know, take the biggest hit. Like, I saw him, like, all year. You know, I've worked with Dylan when he won his championship in 2019 on the 250s. And, man, like, it doesn't. Somehow, some way in his head, whether it's his upbringing, whatever it is, he can freaking rebound, and it doesn't matter if the start doesn't work out or the bike's not perfect or, you know, the clouds are in the wrong direction. He somehow pulls through. You always know you're going to get 110% effort from Dylan.
Okay. What direction were the clouds in when he busted out that hole shot in 2017 at Kamloops?
Yeah, they were going the wrong way with the wind going the other way.
Okay. Anyway, Kevin, great segue, my friend. The mental health and fortitude of DW, one career number 9. Wow. I don't know what to say. You know, we've talked about this and we process it. For me, when I've got to do something dirty that I know it's going to take a lot of work in marathon fashion, it's just end game focus from the beginning, and it has to be that, and I can't take my finger off the pulse of that. If I do, I lose it. I'm not an incremental guy. It's got to be end game focus for me.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a pretty incredible year, and that digger that he took at Supercross. Oh boy. I felt that at home. Just seeing it on screen, it was a nasty, nasty looking crash, you know, but he's overcome a lot, right? And he's an interesting guy. That one post that he had where he was complaining about suspension, and his dad said, well, just move over 3 feet, you know, as a young racer, right? He wants the factory equipment. His dad's saying, no, move over 3 feet. I mean, there's a dad that kind of in his response is pushing him to be next level. Right. And that concrete support that families can give their kids at the track, it can serve them again on the track, but also serve them as they move into adulthood, whether they stay in moto or they go somewhere else. That concrete support's really important. And you go to the track and it's so awesome because there's so many families there that are really supporting their kids. And it's a whole village. You know, the motocross community is a real village raising each other's children. You got the parents on the sidelines. They're encouraging their kids. You got the other kids in the same class. The parents are supporting even the competition. You know, if somebody breaks a lever or, you know, gets a flat tire, there's always someone really ready and willing to help. And so those kinds of things, they really help our kids to develop the social emotional competence to push through life's challenges. And so you get guys like Dylan or Jess or even you, Ryan, or you, Brent. It's that continuing to have the eye on the goal that gets us through each of life's challenges. And that's what formulates the resilience to manage each thing that comes up. And it's awesome to see it. Kids, every kid should have a dirt bike. Every kid should have a dirt bike because it trains them up in to being disciplined, social people.
Yeah.
And they have lots of good role modeling. They have lots of good structure and lots of expectations put on them. And it's closed and it's contained and it's safe in that environment.
Yep.
And it has such a positive impact on so many other areas in their life.
Ryan,
I think, sorry, one second. I was just going to touch on Kevin's thing there. I think it's, I couldn't agree more with you, Kevin. I think it's important that every kid just has a passion of something that they want to strive towards to where their parents can get behind them and support them, because that makes that kid push even that much harder, that turns them into an adult, into a parent, into a grandparent down the road. That instills so much knowledge into them, right? So, you know, as much as I love the dirt bike side of things, I also love the bicycle side of things. I also love whether your, you know, son's passionate about hockey or your daughter's passionate about hockey, soccer, football, whatever it is, something that can the parent can get behind them to really support them. And I think that's huge in the gains, you know what I mean? The gains of growing into that adult that we all should be.
Right.
Yeah. And even for the parents that are struggling to parent their own kids, you know, you go to the track and you see other parents who are doing it well. And so those parents that are struggling, they learn from the parents that are doing it well.
Exactly.
And that's what I love, because there's the community piece, but there's also the interpersonal piece. I mean, I love hockey too. I love other sports, but in the motocross community, there's that connection that I haven't seen, really, to be honest, in any other sport.
Yeah,
it's competitive, yes.
Yeah,
it's competitive, yes. But you're also learning sportsmanship.
Yep.
You're also learning teamwork.
Yep.
And you know, when one kid wins, you know, we're all there celebrating for that kid and his family. Or if one kid goes down, we're all running to make sure he's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lifestyle and camaraderie is like no other sport, in my opinion, anyway. Ryan, you've got a young family now to see Randy and Bowen growing as quickly as he is. Meston, sharp-looking young man. He was so proud to run up to the car when we pulled in there.
Yeah.
Talk about the summer and the experience for you and the family.
No, it was good. It was a good summer. It was something a little bit out of our norm, and I think that that's the world that we live in now. I mean, we hit the road at the end of June, and I flew back a couple times and whatnot, but we're on the road for like 50 some days. So living in the trailer, and I'll be quite honest with you guys, it was effing awesome, if you want to put it into words, because we had no TV, we had no news channel, we were very limited on our phones, and it was great for the mental health side of things, if you want to put it that way.
Awesome.
We weren't worried about the COVID-19, and we weren't worried about this and everything like that. So it was great for us as a family. I mean, of course, it doesn't matter if you're at home or you're on the road. Everybody has their own struggles and arguments and this and that. But it was great. We struggled the most when we came home back to reality, because it's like, what the heck are we doing right now? And that was awesome. But, you know, we got to work and we got to pay the bills. So it was great. You know, Meston had a great time making new friends on the road and spending time with others. And for me, it's easy because I know a lot of people and whatnot. And, you know, get to spend time with guys that I grew up racing with. You know, I spent so much time with Colton Fasciotti. I mean, Colton was a competitor of mine. Obviously, he excelled way more than I did during my career. But guess what? Colton and me are buddies. We work on the same team. Our sons are competitors. They're both the exact same speed in the 50 class, which is stressful at times. And our wives like to drink White Claws together. So it's just crazy how it comes. It's just crazy how it all comes full circle with everything. But we're looking forward to continuing on the dream, you know.
Yeah, it's the Journey song. Cool. I can hear it now for sure. Hey, getting back to reality, the Future West crew killing it. You're up there. We were talking about Pemberton, and man, the surface on that racetrack was nothing that I remember racing on. It looked good, pretty good up there last weekend, some 400 entries.
Yeah, no, it's been good. I mean, the local scene of motocross has been great. I mean, if you look 50 class, 65 class, 85 class, super mini, I mean, they're huge, and that's, thank God for the pandemic. It's given our sport a little bit of a boost, if you can believe that or not. You know, obviously we like it to go back to normal, but track was great up there. They did a fantastic job, and you know, we didn't want to have to move that race from Kamloops to Pemberton, but they stepped up. Pemberton crew stepped up and did a fantastic job, and you know, the people supported it, which obviously makes it awesome putting in the work for it and everything like that. So good weekend all around. Track was probably the best I've ever ridden it personally since I've been out here since 2010. Brent, you saw the photos, and it looked fantastic.
Yeah. I've also got that Stellar Foeman photo that John Bowman took of you blowing up the berm there one year. That's one of my personal favorites, I think, back to 2014 or 2015. But
2014, yeah.
Sweet. Fast forward to Quesnel, another track that I've got a soft spot for. It's not quite Gopher Dunes gnarly rough, but that place has got it going on when it gets all bombed out Sakamoto style in Quesnel. You guys will be up there next weekend.
Closest thing we get to Gopher Dunes here in BC, that's for sure. Yeah, looking forward to going up there. It's going to get good turnout for sure. I mean, it's going to attract the northern riders, and as well as the riders that have been, you know, participating in the series here. So great timing to go up there kind of in September, you know, cooler temperatures, whatnot. So honestly, timing wise, couldn't be better. So it should be a good one.
Yeah, and the fall colors on the deciduous tree is always a beautiful thing to enjoy out west here as you
totally
head up that highway. Ryan, I can't thank you enough. This has been so much fun. We're going to do it again here real soon. Anybody out there you'd like to thank?
No, for sure. Yeah, of course, obviously the guys at Maple Ridge Motorsports. Been there 2014, Brent. It's crazy. We've taken a few years off this game of the podcast with you and whatnot, but same people supporting me as always. And stoked for you getting back in the podcast game, and obviously Kevin backing you up. I mean, you guys are a great team, and hopefully you guys make some waves in this deal. And anytime you want to talk to me, I'm always here. Probably gets boring after a while for some people, but I'm always here for you guys.
Well, we certainly appreciate
Thanks, Ryan.
That, my friend. And just before Kevin shakes you loose there, our ostensible goal is to provide a platform to create some talk around mental wellness, because that's the direction that, you know, we are unifocused here. And there's lots of spinoff and great conversation around something we all love.
Absolutely, man. Hey, you guys have a good night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
All right. Ryan Lockhart, the man we coined the people's favorite. Kevin, we're about an hour and a half in here, our inaugural test episode, Motocross Saved My Life, Mental Health Talk Radio. Thanks for doing this, my friend.
Yeah, what an awesome treat to have, you know, two champions really on the show offering their perspectives. And I sure appreciate Ryan Lockhart's perspective, you know, as a racer, you know, seriously in the sport, and now as more of a, you know, part-time racer, but still an ambassador for the sport, and also as a parent. And what a wonderful story that he shared, coming full circle with Colt and Colt's son, and being able to stay in the sport now from a totally different vantage point. That must be just such an awesome opportunity for him.
Yeah, and Colton was one of the ones packing up that GDR rig there along with Ryan that was had those potential missiles over our head when I was interviewing Tanner at the end of the day. But great to see Colton involved in something that he loves for sure, the five-time MX1 champion on the 450, the GDR Honda. All right, Kevin, should we try a call in to win? We're going to give away a copy of Motocross Saved My Life. If somebody wants to call in, the call in to win number, which I probably should have thrown out earlier, is 515-602-9752. Once again, 515-602-9752. Somebody wants to give me a ring right now, I'll send you a Motocross Save My Life gift package. I'm not sure on how everybody made out logging into the chat board and whatnot, the protocol. It's been a while since I've gone through that. You go to Blog Talk Radio, log in with an email, create a username, and that'll allow you to access our interactive and fun chat board, something that we had a lot of fun with back when we did the Canadian Moto Show.
Yeah, this is just such a cool opportunity just to come back on and to get a new show going with the Motocross Saved My Life from Its Darkness book. And, you know, I so enjoyed your book, Brent. You know, as a counselor, I learned so much from that book because it was all first-person, real-world experience. It was awesome.
I appreciate your feedback on that, Kevin. And we have no commercial affiliation here at Motocross Saved My Life. I only believe in thanking those that are making things possible in the world that I and we believe in. Special shout out to Troy and Sandra from Maple Ridge Motorsports and everybody else that I mentioned in my opinion, went the extra mile to facilitate and make our trip to Walton Raceway what it was, and to hear my friend Ryan speak on the goodness and how it was a golden moment. It certainly was for me, and I get that all day.
Yeah, oh, Troy, Sandra, it's awesome. You know, you guys, the way you guys participate in the sport and really support the sport locally. And I don't know if you know this, Brent, but when I did that little promo video, that was a jersey that Sandra and Troy had sent me, actually. And they put Maple Ridge Motorsport on the back and had my name on it. It was a beautiful, beautiful jersey. And so I sure appreciate them for everything that they do.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I want to add, too, that Maple Ridge Motorsports, if you're in their neighborhood, stop in and say hi. Troy and Sandra, they're always a hoot, happy to see you, and they've got so much stuff in their store. If you've never been in there, the way it's tucked away, it's a true cave for a two-wheeled enthusiast. Go on in there. They also have signed copies of Motocross Saved My Life. Troy and Sandra were good enough to pick up a box to have for sale there that I signed at Walton Raceway. I'm very proud to have Motocross Saved My Life available in Maple Ridge Motorsports. And on any other platform that you wish pretty much, Motocross Saved My Life distributed through the Ingram Group, available at brentworld.com. On the book page, the Motocross Save My Life page. We also have a few other things on the site that you might want to check out, our YouTube channel. We're going to continue to do that. Kevin, I appreciate some of the work that you've done, that video that you talked about, that you were wearing that Fox head shirt provided by Maple Ridge Motorsports. We're going to continue that. It's a great tool and an outlet. For me, I find that I look at a lot of the stuff. I go to different places. A lot of the military stuff south of the border helps me with their protocols, some of the things that they're using. And, you know, as you were talking about with Jess or any other pro motocrosser athlete that lays out a blueprint of what he's been through in the way of trauma and, you know, that blueprint for anybody aspiring to overcome anything ends up being the path that he takes. And to being able to share that and showcase it a little more often, I think it's going to put more of a positive light on our sport. And if we can do that here with Motocross Saved My Life and sharing my story, it's a beautiful thing in my opinion. And I say my, it really has nothing to do with me. My wife is a wonderful soul. She has my back all day long, and she is as committed to this endeavor as I am. And on that note, I just can't thank everybody enough who's been a part of our journey.
Gisela's been a huge part of the journey, and it's been, you know, my pleasure to get to know her too over the years. And having family support as we work through our own things becomes such a critical piece. And she's just done an amazing, beautiful job.
One of the things that occurred to me too is that my wife, as wonderful and beautiful as she is probably one of the least forgiving people on the face of the earth that I've ever met. And that is a fact. If you cross her, look out, because it's on. Who knew?
I'll try not to cross her.
Who knew? All right.
That's so funny.
On the note of that thread, I think it's probably time to wrap it up here. We're getting close to, we've been on the air for about an hour and a half. It's not about time. It's quality, not quantity. I try to remind myself that. I will in no way, shape, or form be broadcasting 137 live episodes in a four-year frame of 2 hours plus. So this is going to be scaled back a little bit. We're going to focus on the content and structure some episodes around certain themes that include people that are, you know, dealing with, going through, or maybe professionals on the topics or subjects that we want to share.
Yeah, well, Brent, I got to thank you for having me on the inaugural show, Motocross Saved My Life. It's been awesome. It's been such a privilege and an opportunity. And, you know, I just really want to encourage and support you to continue getting your message out there. It's a strong message. When people pick up your book and they read it, I think they'll be really surprised. And I think you hit it on the head. People think that maybe the trauma came from the injury. And I think your book lays it out. No, it doesn't. Yeah. It's other things. And I think people will be really encouraged to read through it and to see exactly how you approached each one of these challenges and these problems. And you really did prevail through them. And here we are, and we got this opportunity. So thank you for letting me be a part of that. And down the road, if we got more topic ideas, you know, if you want to phone me up, I'd be happy to be a part of it too. It's such a joy to be here.
I've got tons of bad ideas, and not one of them goes away till somebody gets hurt.
See, that's why we get along so good. I like these ideas.
Okay. All right, my friend. In all seriousness, I thank you all. Please check out www.brentworld.com. The Mental Health Talk Radio link will be on there monthly. We're going to try and be on the air once a month or more. I bit the left side of my tongue yesterday chewing a lemon, and it's been letting me know every time I try to speak out of that side of my mouth. So I'll just try and keep things on the straight and narrow here. Yeah, Motocross Saved My Life will be on the air probably once monthly with a two-hour show or more. Join us if you can. Until then, on behalf of myself and Kevin Lefebvre, airmail out.
Good night, all.
Brent reminds you that PTSD, trauma, and mental health issues are real. Whatever your issues, Brent wants to help. His understanding is grounded in his being and always being a survivor and advocate. You can find out more at BrentWorld.com, where you can get books, watch videos, and of course, listen to the podcast. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Motocross Saved My Life podcast with your host, Brent Airmail Worrell.